Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Monday, March 24th. I'm Olivia Rose. Sitka's commercial herring fishery is smaller this year, and that means fishery reports from the state will be restricted. At an informational meeting last week, area management biologist Aaron Dupuy said that fewer than three processors and a limited fleet are participating this year. The Alaska law, which exists for all fisheries, says that the state can release confidential fish ticket data if more than three entities are involved in the fishery. Dupuy said the low participation means that they cannot release the harvest data to the public.
Also, because we will have less than three processors this year, I think this is the first time ever in the history of the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. But because of the number of processors, harvest data will be confidential from this year. That's state law. There's no way around it. I wish it were different sometimes, but harvest information will be confidential this year.
Dupuy said he thinks the fishery, with its limited capacity, could harvest around 1,000 tons per day this year, which is relatively normal for recent years. But the state won't be sharing the daily catch information or the total tonnage of herring harvested at the end of the season. Harvest data is a carefully followed metric in the controversial fishery. Herring eggs have been a highly valued traditional food source for Alaska Native people for thousands of years, and traditional harvesters have called for more conservative management of the commercial fishery for decades. In last year's fishery, the state set the highest ever harvest rate at over 80,000 tons. However, fishermen only harvested around 12,000 tons, pointing to lower participation and market demand than previous years, even though state data shows the fish population is doing well. Juneau's only landfill is filling up quickly, really quickly. If the town keeps up its current dumping pace, residents and businesses could run out of space for their trash within the next decade. A new study offers a few scenarios for what the city could do after that, but as KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, all options take time and come with a hefty price tag.
The clock is ticking down for Juneau to come up with a new place to put its trash. Waste Management is the private company that owns Juneau's only landfill. It was built in the 60s. City officials and the company say the landfill likely has about 10 years left before it fills up, maybe 15 if they can stretch it. At a Public Works and Facilities meeting earlier this week, Denise Koch, the city's director of engineering and public works, told assembly members the city needs to act now.
I think that we're coming to a point where we have to make a decision, just because any landfill doesn't last forever. It will fill up, and we can't wait until we find out that the landfill is closing to have these sort of conversations.
A newly released study commissioned by the city offers three different routes the city could take to address its trash issue. Option one, build a new landfill. Option two, ship the trash south. And option three, burn it. This is Janet Goodrich with the Jacobs Engineering Group, which conducted the study. At the meeting, she explained what solutions would best fit Juneau and what barriers each one would face.
It is pretty important that CBJ look at a way to establish control over your future one way or another, whether you stay privately owned or publicly owned in all of the parameters or some of them.
All of the options would be multi-million dollar projects and all come with their own logistical hurdles. Take the idea to build a waste-to-energy facility to essentially burn the trash, for example. It sounds simple enough, but Tara Miller-Kassman with the engineering group says that's the study's least preferred option.
The waste stream in Juneau is substantially smaller than other regions where waste-to-energy plants have been constructed. It likely would not be within Juneau's best interest to have diversion programs to divert waste for recycling or composting, because essentially all of that waste would need to be processed at the waste-to-energy facility in order to optimize the efficiency of the operations.
A more preferred option laid out in the study is to build a new landfill. That has some barriers too, though. For one, the price tag is pretty high. For just a 50-year landfill, it's anticipated to cost $50 to $162 million. For a 100-year landfill, it'll be between $99 and $323 million. Goodrich says timing is also a factor.
My experience personally is that a landfill is going to take at least 10 years from inception to garbage coming in there.
She says building a landfill can take up to 30 years because of all the regulations and permitting. And that's much longer than the current landfill will likely last. But that's where the third option, shipping the waste south, comes into play. Juneau produces roughly 30,000 tons of waste a year. The city has taken steps in recent years to at least slow down the flow of waste in town by using its recycling program and working with a privately owned compost facility to divert waste. Cruise lines have also agreed to stop offloading bulky and oversized items into the landfill. But these steps are only band-aids. The group that did the study says shipping the waste south could be a permanent solution, or it could be used as a sort of crutch in the meantime while a long-term solution like building a new landfill is being figured out. Assembly members at the meeting wanted to explore that idea further. They plan to discuss it more at an upcoming Committee of the Whole meeting and consider commissioning another study to dive deeper into the options. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
A draft of the 20-year plan for Alaska's state ferry system is open for public comment. Officials with the Alaska Department of Transportation are asking residents to weigh in on the plan that will guide the Alaska Marine Highway System through the year 2045. The long-range plan seeks to increase service to over 30 ports. In recent years, port calls have decreased and coastal communities have repeatedly voiced their concern. In an online public meeting last Wednesday, AMHS Director Craig Tornga said they're planning for more reliable service, not increasing it much, but bringing it back to pre-pandemic levels.
We're really looking at trying to increase the port calls at our current communities and to make sure that we have some reliable service on a regular basis that can be planned and then keeping it as efficient as we can from a cost perspective for the state, so it can be maintainable going forward.
The state plans to build new hybrid ferries to replace the aging fleet, hire more workers to run them, and improve infrastructure at the ports. All of that, plus regular maintenance, will cost about $3 billion. The plan to pay for it includes a combination of state and federal money, along with increasing profits from ridership. In creating the plan, the state hired engineering and research groups to crunch data and gather information from dozens of coastal communities. Economist Katie Berry says the ferry plan anticipates the state to appropriate roughly $120 million a year in operating costs. The 20-year plan also calculates that federal funding remains intact.
The expectation is that the federal funding sources that have predated the Federal Infrastructure Act will be stable over this time period.
The infrastructure law brought in about $700 million in federal funds to the ferry system in the last 3 years. Meanwhile, Governor Mike Dunleavy has vetoed millions in state ferry funding that the legislature approved. Efforts for a long-range plan began in 2022 after the legislature created the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board to help guide the state's Department of Transportation. The 9-member board is made up of state workers and coastal residents with knowledge of the ferry system. The public comment period is on the long-range plan ends March 30th. You can comment online at the state's DOT website. The Operations Board will consider the plan in April before it heads to the legislature. According to state law, the plan will be updated every 5 years. A report that highlighted the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people was removed from several federal websites last month. The final report by the Not Invisible Act Commission was a joint effort of the U.S. Justice and the Interior Departments completed in November 2023. It focused on the disproportionate rates of assault and murder in Indigenous communities across the country, as well as unique issues faced by Alaska Native people. President Trump signed the law that mandated the report during his first term. In February, the report's authors and advocates noticed that the link had been deleted from several federal websites, including the Department of Justice website. The reason for the removal wasn't immediately clear. Michelle Demmer is a longtime tribal judge and University of Alaska Fairbanks professor who was one of the report's commissioners. Demmer, who is Tlingit in Haida, said she was deeply disappointed with its removal.
It's like a slap in the face. It just really saddens me then to have the report removed like it doesn't even exist.
Over 18 months, the commission heard from people across the country, including Anchorage, Bethel, and Emonik. These stories were included in the final report.
people traveled far and wide to come give testimony about situations that involved their loved ones. They trusted us with their stories, even though it was painful for them to have to retell these stories, but they felt like this might be the one opportunity that someone hears them and takes action.
Charlene Akpikapok is the executive director of the nonprofit Data for Indigenous Justice. Apok, who is Inupiaq, attended the commission hearing that was held in Anchorage. She says she found it unsettling that the report was deleted from several websites, but she doesn't want people to be discouraged.
We still know what was said. We still know our truth. We still know our stories, and they can't take that away from us. Our knowledge and our truth is something that cannot be erased.
Apok also says she appreciated the report's specific recommendations for Alaska. She says they spoke to historic violence against Alaska Native women, the landscape and structure of rural communities, and challenges with legal and public safety systems. Apok adds that despite the report's removal, organizations like Data for Indigenous Justice will continue to document and track cases of violence against Indigenous people in Alaska. President Donald Trump signed an executive order last week abolishing the United States Department of Education. While many key programs remain unchanged, hundreds of millions of federal dollars are at stake in Alaska if the order disrupts funding. KTOO's Jamie Deep has more.
The recent executive order is part of the Trump administration's long-term plan to get rid of the federal department. It currently funds special education and other programs that support rural and high-poverty schools. It also makes sure all students are receiving fair public education. Alaska Department of Education and Early Development Commissioner Dina Bishop attended the executive order signing in Washington, D.C. on Thursday, as first reported by the Anchorage Daily News. The federal department manages millions that fund programs that benefit Alaska's students and schools and monitors the quality of services. Alaska receives the most federal funding per student in the country. Trump says many of the programs and funding will stay in place. But Juneau School Board member Will Muldoon says he's concerned about the lack of guidance on navigating the changes in the short term.
I haven't gotten any kind of roadmap. And I think that's always scary, too, because like education is a big ship. So turning it, changing it, it takes a while.
Special education is largely funded and supported by the federal department. The Juneau School District reports close to 900 students are receiving special education services this school year. Muldoon says he's concerned that changes to the department could make navigating the system for students with disabilities and their families more difficult as well.
People don't go to school and graduate and get a degree to be an advocate for their child. It shouldn't be a job.
The department does more than fund special education. The federal agency also helps fund schools with high numbers of students whose families are experiencing poverty, called Title I schools. There are five of those schools in Juneau. Amanda Duvall is the federal programs coordinator for the district. She says every Title I school in the district used the federal funds to hire another teacher this year.
That is always up for discussion every year, but the reality is most of them find that additional teacher at these high class sizes is helpful.
She says these federal funds stack on top of what goes toward general funds for the district, which mainly come from the state and local level. Duvall says insufficient state funding makes federal support critical.
We are heavily grant dependent and grateful for all of our various partners in the community. And this federal funding allows schools to deepen knowledge for their teachers, to have cohesive opportunities for their students, provide additional experiences that we all value.
The Department of Education also manages nearly $46 million in financial aid for University of Alaska students. University of Alaska President Pat Pitney said in a message sent to the entire university system Thursday that there are no immediate changes for students. More than half of the students at the University of Alaska Southeast receive financial aid. UAS Chancellor Aparna Palmer says administrators are monitoring any changes, but she encourages students to continue applying for federal aid.
As far as I can tell, in the short term, we don't expect to have any large impacts to our operations or to our ability to offer students federal financial aid or their Pell Grants.
Despite the executive order, only Congress can abolish the Department of Education. Whether lawmakers decide to follow the president's lead remains to be seen. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.